You want to start, Sanjeev? You want to host, Mr. Host?
I'm Sanjeev, and that's it.
That's it. No CV, no biography, nothing.
No.
How long have you been?
Trying to walk on this path of Krishna consciousness. Trying my heart to become Krishna conscious day by day, gradually.
And you were born in Mathura?
No, born in
Lucknow.
In Orissa.
Orissa, wow.
From Delhi, India.
You're born in Orissa, huh? But your family's is Delhi. Delhi Wallace.
Yeah, from Mathura. Right?
Mathura, yeah. Okay. Very, very noble lineage. We're very honored to be here. Very honored to be in your house. This is the third time now for me, yeah. When did you come here? About October? September?
Come to?
This place, this house.
This house, I came in the end of July.
Wow, it didn't seem possible for so long. So
that was the main goal of buying a house. Otherwise, I was pretty much comfortable in the apartment and I can have my family.
Yeah.
Krishna is merciful that you can give me your opportunity. And you're merciful too.
He drummed his other neighbors out of existence. Drummed them down to the next floor. They were all right, though. So I'm Mukunda Goswami, and I'm the resident of the temple here in the Potomac, Maryland. And my portfolio is communications and governing body commissioner for ISKCON. And I'll introduce some of the devotees, maybe, who are new, so I can know a little bit more about them. But we'll wait till we come to... Oh, this is Lakshman. Stand up. Because otherwise you can't see, and that's Lakshman.
Both
Lakshman, and their names are both Lakshman Bhandari. Their last names, surnames are the same. They both went for 7 years. They're both from Nepal to the Bhaktivedanta Swami International Gurukul, Krishna Balaram Temple in Vrindavan, and they're going to spend a year traveling around and being with us at the temple. They've been here now since October 29th. Do we count 29th or 27th? 27th. 29th, okay. Yeah, they'll be here for a year. And, okay, you're next.
I'm Sandeep Modi. I'm a pre-medical student at Virginia Commonwealth University. And I've been going to the temple for the last years. And I'm also trying to become Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. What books have you read?
I have read the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and I'm trying to read the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and
you finished
other books.
Finished reading the Bhagavatam?
No much.
Okay.
I've read
5 demerits.
Is there?
That's okay. Okay, Abhay.
I'm Abhay Asraya Das. I have contacted the society in 1974. Came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada means spiritual world. I'm trying to live in Krishna consciousness. I'm here for the last 2 years. I came 14 November 1994, I think.
Yeah.
I'm trying to serve Sisi Radha Madan Mahal.
He's a great cook, and he's a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, part of one of the vanishing species. And this is Lexi from he's from Moscow, and he's been with us now about 2 months. he's helping edit the videos, and if we have time tonight, we'll look at some of his handiwork. He's working on the non-linear digital video editing system we have. And this is Yaroslav. Yaroslav has just joined us. Saibo. He's also a technical master of computer networks and hardware and software, and just joined us. And he's also going to be working with Priyavrata's Food for Life, more or less full-time, we think.
He's from Russia, too.
He's from Russia. And this is his wife. You can stand up, Marcia. She's from Moscow. Haribo. And they just came, so we don't know a whole lot about them, but we have very good references that she's reputed to be a very excellent cook and good with children. Yeah. So we'll test her out. We'll test her out.
I'm Duane. A friend of Sanjeev's.
And a boarder.
And
you still. And you rent a room here? And you're renting a room still?
Well,
no.
Moved out.
Oh, you just did. You used to have a room here down below. Yeah. Very good. He's also a very good cook.
Makes good tea.
Very good. He's the chai wala.
Yeah. The chai wala. I think Puneet is next.
Nothing to say.
Oh, you have to.
Just say simple, nobody.
If you don't say, we'll say it for you. So you better say.
Puneet
is.
Where are you from,
Puneet?
From New York.
New York.
Yeah, just visiting for the weekend.
And
nice.
He's practicing medicine, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you go often to a temple in New York?
I try to go often. Yeah.
In New York City or Newark, New Jersey?
Usually it's like more in New York
business,
but
More in Toronto. And he's a friend with Sandeep and comes down for visits, and he's very interested in getting involved in our video Hare Krishna today, script writing and camera work, etc., other things.
Interesting.
Yeah. And
okay. I get to I feel like I've been going to temple for quite some years, but I don't think I really took it seriously until this last year. So, now I've been reading Prabhupada's books and chanting them.
What's your name?
Ketu.
Okay. And this is his brother?
People. And his brother. And he had gotten me going to the temple and chanting and all that. So, we're starting new and fresh, I guess.
So are you from Washington area?
Yeah, like Maryland, Washington metropolitan area, not Washington. Live in Maryland, now we live in Virginia.
We went to their home and chanted a few times. Once when it was snowing, right?
It's pretty heavy. Raining.
Raining pretty bad, yeah.
Okay, Stephen.
My name is Stephen Stoltenberg, friend of Sanjeev's. And I first associated with devotees, I think, in 1969, when I first came to my hometown, Portland, Oregon. And I've sort of associated off and on since then, but it's really my friendship with Sanjeev that's kind of brought me back into a more active practice. My New Year's resolution is to learn one new bhajan for each Ekadashi. Yes.
Very good. That's my same hometown. I was in Portland.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. He went to Portland also.
That was
a great
Yeah.
I'm Doug, and I'm also a friend of Sanjeev, and through my discussions with him about his faith and his journey on the path towards Krishna consciousness, I have become Krishna curious.
Very good. You work with Sanjeev?
Okay.
I'm a teacher. You have seen me here. I'm Sanjeev's uncle. He's kind enough to invite me to Krishna Prasadam whenever.
You're his brother of his father?
No.
Maternal. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, and
brother of
I'm a Krishna
mother.
Devotee for the last 60 years.
All right.
Oh. 60.
Oh.
60.
He wants a bigger hand.
Okay, Shrestha Prabhu.
Shrestha was the president of our temple in Potomac 3 years. Huh?
Two and a half.
Great. Have a lovely day. She's sister of Sanjeev.
Sister of
Yeah, two elevated souls. And your daughter?
Sister Shadrava's mother-in-law. She's a very, very big devotee. And always makes render services for any of the programs. She's a very big devotee.
Shastra and a great cook. And if you want to see her on video, you can go down to the Smithsonian Institution any day of the week at the Sackler Gallery, where there's a puja exhibition exhibited. And there's a video that runs continuously, and it shows her offering arti in the temple there. It says Krishna Temple in Potomac, Maryland. Yeah, you've got to go in the video room. It's there. 24 hours. I mean, it's all the time, over and over again. Not 24 hours, but 12 hours. Yeah.
You just have joint Krishna consciousness and see the world.
That's right. Right in your own home, you can see the whole world. Next time we'll come, we'll bring some residents of other countries, more exotic. Thailand, Hong Kong, China. You go to Portland regularly or not the last time?
Oh, yeah.
Keyboard? Do we bring that other keyboard, the electric one? Didn't bring it. In the car? Maybe you can bring it. We'll do something else. You know. Oh, actually, this, it doesn't matter. We might as well just play this one.
La la la. Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
Yeah.
have a Bhagavad Gita we can read somewhere. How's your foot? So, Sandeep will read a few lines from the seventh chapter, first verse of Bhagavad Gita. I'll make a little commentary, and we can all say something about it.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Sikta Manapartha Yogam Yunjan Vadashiva Samshayam Samagramam Vipayana Sasitashtu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Now hear, O son of Pratha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt." Purport. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahma Jyoti, or localized Paramatma, realization is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth, because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate. One knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma in full. By practicing of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, "Tatshrinu, or hear from me. No one can be greater authority than Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Srinatam sokatha Krishna punya shravana kirtana hridayantahasto yavadhani vidhoni vidhunoti suhrit satam. I'm going to share with all of them.
No, just read it. Yeah.
To hear about Krishna from Vedic literatures or to hear from him directly in the Bhagavad Gita is itself righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best-wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, bhakti yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of Asamshayam Samagram, understanding of the supreme absolute truth, personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam 1.2.17 through verse 21. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna.
Prabhupada is talking about the yoga ladder, and if you can just read the verse once again.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt."
And that the ultimate yoga of all yogas is bhakti yoga. And at that stage, one can know the Supreme, free from doubt. This, then, is not simply a matter of consciousness, but a matter of having a firm conviction. So Krishna consciousness is sometimes spelt with a small c. I mean, usually it is. I prefer to spell it that way because it means a type of consciousness. We all have consciousness. Consciousness is a symptom of our existence, the symptom of life. According to the kind of life we lead, the kind of lives we've led, our consciousness is developed in a certain way. And according to the way we behave, it develops further in a certain way. It's not only the fact that we're aware of things, but it's a particular has a particular flavor, just like a flower. A certain flower, a rose has a certain fragrance, and a carnation has another fragrance, and a lily has another fragrance, and a plumerian. They all have different fragrances. So the consciousness of an individual has a particular type of fragrance, a particular quality to it. And Krishna consciousness is a time when the consciousness becomes purified, and it has a kind of sweet aroma. It's a consciousness that is purified, as we've been reading, of contamination. When air passes over something obnoxious, it reaches our nostrils and smells very unpleasant. And if it passes over something very sweet, like a garden of flowers, the same air, it has the same chemical constituency, it's still made up of nitrogen and oxygen and hydrogen and other elements, but it has a completely different aspect to it, a different flavor. So consciousness is the same, it's awareness, but just as we see individuals, we see different people. And sometimes it's not the way they look, but what they say. It's said sometimes that a fool reveals himself by what he says, not by how he looks. A person may look very foolish, but when that person speaks, may speak very wisely or very, very intelligently, or vice versa. A person may look very sophisticated, but on speaking, turns out to be almost unintelligible or foolish. So consciousness is a little bit like that. Everybody has a different consciousness, a different flavor to their consciousness. A snowflake is unique. Every snowflake has a different pattern. No two are unique. They're all snowflakes, but they're different. So similarly, everybody has a different kind of consciousness. And there are different kinds of levels of purification of consciousness. There are different modes of nature described in the Bhagavad Gita. Some people, they come to Krishna consciousness because they're suffering. Some people come because they want to gain something material. Others come because they're curious, and others come seeking ultimate knowledge. These are the four types of people described in this chapter who come to Krishna consciousness. Now, those are legitimate reasons for wanting to attain higher consciousness. Most people want to attain what they refer to as higher consciousness by trying to be more successful in terms of the path of material progress, birth, education, aristocracy. highest level, as is mentioned in this purport. And then some people want to come because they're suffering. This is another form of desire to achieve something transcendental. In the material world, in one sense, everybody suffers because we have to go through birth, death, old age, and disease. We have to experience sometimes pleasant things, sometimes unpleasant things. So a person who wants to experience pleasant things only and not to experience unpleasant things, or feels a burden, an excessive burden of suffering, will turn to spirituality or wish to come to Christian consciousness in order to reduce that suffering. That's a very common thing. Another is curiosity. Krishna consciousness presents a very interesting cultural phenomenon and an interesting intellectual phenomenon, an interesting experiential phenomenon, something different. So out of just curiosity, we find many people trying to understand what higher consciousness is. And then there are those who seek ultimate answers to ultimate questions. Questions like, who am I? Where am I going? What is God? What is time? What is nature? What is the individual? What is God? These are questions which thoughtful people exercise their minds with, or they're just seekers sometimes. They're actually seeking something absolute. This is the type of person who gets the most benefit from trying to invoke some form of spirituality or particularly Krishna consciousness. Everyone is actually looking for a perfection, directly or indirectly, knowingly or unknowingly, articulating it or not. And one of the ways this perfection is met is in striking the perfect relationship. That's another quest of the living being. We're seeking a perfect relationship. And in Krishna consciousness, because Krishna particularly emphasizes that I am Krishna, the person Krishna, it's possible to enter into a very personal relationship with Krishna. And therefore, of the different types of yogas, starting with Hatha Yoga and Prana Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and many other forms of yoga, Ananda Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, one comes to bhakti, which is devotion. And it means devotion, obedience, loyalty, all those things which in many ways are unpleasant for us in the material world, because we don't like to pay fealty to anyone, to be loyal to or faithful or obedient to anyone. It's very common that one is asked to question authority. And in Bhagavad Gita it is stated that one, tadvidi pranipatena, one should question spiritual figures, spiritual leaders, but one should also render service. So it's experiential in that the consciousness changes by rendering service. The difference between rendering service to Krishna and Krishna's followers and those who are not is that the Supreme Being by nature is not only all-powerful but all-good, the summum bonum. And to serve the all-good or to befriend the all-good is to get all-good reciprocation and to establish the perfect relationship for which everyone is always anxious. So consciousness can be purified, can be our friend. It is said in the Bhagavad Gita that the mind is our worst enemy at times, or it can become our best friend. So consciousness is a symptom that the mind is operating, that we're alive. And if one strives for perfection in consciousness, then one ultimately comes to the point of Krishna consciousness, wanting to know what is the perfect and most pure level of consciousness. In one sense, having a mind free from doubt is a very unique and unusual thing, because it is the prerogative and it is the nature of everyone to be very doubtful of everything. But in everything we do, there's also the opposite element, that we have to have some sort of blind faith, as it were. It's like every time we sit in a chair or take a step or pick up a phone, we expect a certain non-unusual event to happen. A usual thing is going to occur. The seat won't cave in, the ground won't fall away, there'll be a voice at the other end of the telephone. In empirical thought, in which there's no recognition of a supreme being, there's also strong faith that this particular way of understanding existence is true and correct. And once a conversation was held with Srila Prabhupada and Professor Katovsky in Russia, and it was basically a kind of friendly debate between communist atheism or atheistic communism and a belief in God or spirituality. And what they concluded was that if at that time one served the state, this was considered the highest thing a human being could do under Marxist-Leninist, Stalinist communism, under that regime. And in spiritual life, it's considered that the highest thing a human being can do is follow the direction of Krishna, who is declared as the Supreme Being. So in either case, or in the case of the scientists, we read textbooks, we get information from an instructor. And in whatever it is, whether it's political, scientific, philosophical, or religious, there is some basic faith, which is what this verse is talking about, or to know without doubt, or to one cannot be a successful researcher unless one does not doubt that the process by which one is undergoing is actually correct and will yield tangible or beneficial results. So similarly, in an ultimate sense, Krishna consciousness, that study of consciousness that purifies the soul and the mind, begins with what we call shraddha, or faith, and ultimately takes one through different stages of associating with devotees, of and engaging in different forms of worship, of clearing the heart from offenses, or should we say imperfections. Then a stage of steadiness is reached. It's compared to a candle that doesn't flicker. It burns all the time. Then another level is enthusiasm. There is great enthusiasm to engage in the process. And finally, there are stages of supreme devotion, known as bhava and prema, in which one attains what is called samadhi, or a state of continuous absorption or meditation. And in this stage, one constantly sees the form of Krishna, just like a person who is head of a family while working sees maybe a picture of the wife and children or whatever. And by inner vision is always meditating on what's going to happen at the end of the day, what's going to happen at the end of the promotion or the holiday. That vision is what's sustaining a person in all duty and in all walks of life. So to the transcendentalist who goes through these stages and develops an understanding, a comprehension, a commitment, a faith free from doubt, that same inner vision of constant meditation or samadhi takes place. And at that point, the consciousness is purified. There's a great burden lifted from the heart and mind of such a person, and one feels one is on the right path, or without doubt. So one of the first things that happens when one engages in Krishna consciousness, or begins to chant anyway, is that there is a sense of peace, peacefulness. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamayeshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrichati. Shanti means peace. One actually feels a sense of peace. And then further progressing in Krishna consciousness, one feels a sense of happiness, but which springs from within. It's a source of non-material happiness. We generally get happiness by external stimuli. Turn on the TV, go to the movie, see the play, get in the new car, walk out into the garden and smell the nice flowers. These are all different kinds of, or see the family or loved ones or friends. These are all forms of external stimuli which make us happy. And advanced stages of spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, one feels a happiness that is actually many times greater, but it springs from within. It's a natural happiness that is eternally a part of the living being. We say, Mama Ivamso Jiva Loke Jiva Vipa Sinapana. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that we are all part and parcel. We're all small parts of Krishna, qualitatively the same. So we're naturally joyful. Susukyam Kartamaviyam. The state of consciousness is not only a peaceful state, but it's a happy state. It's a joyful state. And that's what one experiences in chanting. That's something natural. It's an awakening of the natural happiness of the soul. So I'll just stop there, and maybe I'll suddenly have some comments or realizations about this, what we read, or anything else. There's like four or five really basic philosophical points in Krishna consciousness. One is that God is supreme spirit, and that the living being is part of that, but the very tiny in quantity, the same in quality. That every living being is related as a part and parcel and a son or daughter of the Supreme Being, Krishna. One can attain Krishna consciousness by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra very easily and by reading Vedic literature. And that 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya came. That's his picture where the two figures on the right, that's a deity of Lord Chaitanya, announced that in this particular time and age there would be a great flood of love of God that would be manifest through the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And in that way, people who were and are not necessarily spiritually qualified or pure would also begin to take up the process and benefit from it. Yeah.
One question. When I was reading the purport, it talks about the three realizations of Bhagavan, the blessed Brahmacharya from the Jyoti, what the Bhagavan said.
Yeah.
I was wondering, is there a difference between the term Mayavadi and impersonalist?
Yeah, there's a technical difference. The Mayavadi is one who believes that the material world, which is temporary, is not a real world. That it doesn't actually exist, and that it will cease to exist when one attains Brahman. And the impersonalist is one who believes that and is convinced that the ultimate realization is merging into oneness, that this is actually the ultimate and highest form of God, the Brahman, impersonalist realization. So an impersonalist has, and that is not necessarily restricted to Vedic thought. That can be Christian, Islamic, Jewish, or whatever. But that's the vision, that there's a formless, unrepresentable God. And so it's a little technical difference. A Mayavadi can also be an impersonalist and vice versa. But basically Mayavadi is one who says that the material world is not real, does not actually exist.
Is there any contention among the Mayavadis what the highest truth is, or the only contention is that the material world is false?
Yeah, I mean, it's a homogeneous thing when we speak of Mayavadi, much more than impersonalist, because that's the conviction that there will be a time when one will leave this temporary existence and find that it's actually not real. Now, in Krishna consciousness, the conviction is slightly different. It's more than slight, but it depends how you look at it. And that is that the material world is real, but it's temporary. And it's sometimes compared to a dream. A dream, when we have dreams, sometimes we perspire. Sometimes we get very hot or very cold and have other physical manifestations. So in that sense, it's real, but it's temporary. Whereas Mayavadi says that the whole existence is not actually real. It's like a non-material, particle, or a non-existent particle. Of course, there are different types of Mayavadis. There might be some who say that it is only a temporary existence, but actually this is what Mayavadi means, that Maya is the real world and does not exist when one comes to higher consciousness.
Another question I had was, Prabhupada said in his books that the Mayavadis, or impersonalists, I forget which term he used, is the greatest defender of Krishna, on Krishna's lotus feet. But at the same time, in other places in his books, he says that it's possible that once you realize the impersonal from the Jyoti effulgence, it's possible that the next stage could be divine realization. So that's contradictory.
Yeah, it's possible, because everything ultimately depends upon Krishna, his desire. Now he's said to be Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes, but his benediction is without a cause. Otherwise, he couldn't be the cause of everything. So he may confer his benedictions upon a Mayavadi or an impersonalist as he wishes, because he ultimately has that prerogative. And when we speak of taking shelter of Krishna, as Krishna Shraya, or surrendering to Krishna, we speak of surrendering to the will of Krishna. And when Prabhupada writes about the being a great offender, what he means there is that one's greatest difficulty is to think that one cannot progress beyond, that there won't be another existence in which there is personality after the death of this body. So, offensive in the sense that if one thinks that there is a supreme being but denies personhood, it could be kind of like the taking of life in the womb, because medical science, the state of the art is, we don't know if there's life. That's actually what they say. We don't know if it's called life, if we can call it life at this stage, after 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. So the state of it is that you can, without any legal consequence, you can abort a child in the womb. But that's kind of like saying we don't know whether it's alive or not. We'll kill it, and then at some later time we'll find out. So in other words, if your loved one is in the next room and someone says, well, he or she's in the next room, but maybe not, we don't know for sure. So you obviously wouldn't throw a live hand grenade in that room first and then find out later what was in there. So one who has this kind of consciousness, that there is a Lord or a God, but with no attributes, no humanhood, or no eyes, no anything that can do anything, that's considered an affront. You don't just, you know, try to obliterate someone's features. But on the other hand, one can actually progress from impersonal Brahman realization and go to Krishna consciousness, because that's a stage of happiness. The stage of it's called Brahman, the stage of ultimate happiness. So from that stage, if Krishna desires, he can elevate, and he does sometimes, by his causeless mercy, someone to full Krishna consciousness, personal Krishna consciousness. But it's very difficult. But nonetheless, it happens. So one of Krishna's qualities is he is known as the ultimate arbiter, or the reconciler of all contradictions. So even though contradictions appear, Krishna reconciles them. And even in our daily existence, we find so many people that we would say are offenders against the feet. They may be drunkards, they may be thieves and murderers and rogues and rapists and rascals and cheaters and so on and so forth. But still, they have the opportunity to become saintly. And that's not a contradiction. I was on a radio program in L.A. once called Religion on the Line. I was there with a priest, a rabbi, a Catholic father, an Anglican priest, a rabbi, and there were the three of us. And the question for the day, it was one of these talk shows where lots of people phone in. It takes 3 hours, and it went to like 8 states or something. The question for the day was whether or not you could hate someone who was a serial murderer within your faith. Was it right to hate somebody? Anyway, it was a very interesting discussion, because people had different opinions. And the moderator kept citing the case of a serial murderer. There was a particular case going on at that time, someone who murdered or raped 8 women and then killed them. So you have a right to hate such a person. Does your faith allow you to hate such a person? So, of course, when it came my time to speak a few times, discussed how one who develops saintly qualities has to give everyone an opportunity, and that even such persons like that, of that caliber of wickedness, do become and have become saints. And there are instances recorded of such things. And as it's said in Bhagavad Gita, that even if one is the greatest of all sinners, if that person resolves rightly on the path of spiritual consciousness, that person should be considered saintly. Sadhu eva samantavya, which means he's a sadhu. Sadhu means a saintly person. So it's very interesting. But the point is that such a person can even the greatest offender can get perfection in life. And then, again, we don't know what a person's past karma is or what is inside the person's mind. Maybe it's not possible to be, even with association of saintly persons, to be reformed in any way. It may just go on being worse and worse and worse. But some people, they go to jail for murder, and then they think that society is wrong, the laws are wrong, I have my own morality, it's higher, And they actually believe this. And they and as they sit in prison, sometimes they believe it more and more and more and more that society is wrong and wrong and wrong. I suppose there's some truth in it, but nonetheless, they don't get this sense of wanting to reform and purify themselves.
What was your answer to the hatred thing?
The answer would be no, that we don't hate anybody, because we see that there's a soul in everybody, and that soul is by nature happy and pure, but it's temporarily immersed in matter, and in this particular age and time that we're in, that surrounding, it can be very destructive of the good qualities. But one who is saintly has no friends or enemies and sees only the good in everybody. And therefore, everyone is a potential reformer. So the answer would be no, we wouldn't. Yeah, that was my answer. Most of the answers were pretty convoluted. Some of them said that it was possible, but it shouldn't be permanent. We can dislike. Another said that it was okay to dislike, but you shouldn't hate anybody. Kind of. Yeah.
If Krishna is one and truth about Krishna and truth in general is one, how do you reconcile that with the existence of so many different sampradayas within the Vaishnava tradition itself?
Well, every path from not only within Vaishnavas but in every different denomination is really ultimately meant for one purpose, and that is to love God. And for every genuine spiritual person in any faith or any tradition, Vaishnava or other, there's probably 1,000 charlatans, people who are self-motivated, who either want to make money or get fame or some kind of glory. But definitely it's an ulterior motive. It's not to just give everything to Krishna. So when we say one, what is that one thing? Now, some people may have a different idea about that, what that one thing is. And if it's just to be on a path, then you can say all paths lead to the same goal, like all roads lead to Rome. But if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there, as some song once said. So where are we going, and what is the goal? That's the first question. If God is one, well, what do we mean by that? Do we mean that striking a deity is the same as striking a piece of stone, or do we think that the deity is something special, or do we think that the only existence of God is in the atom, is everywhere, and there's no particular place like a temple, or the name of God that's more holy or more valuable, or a spiritual person? Because there is that concept. That's a kind of impersonal concept, that everything is just one and it doesn't matter what we do, because ultimately we're all going to get there somehow or other. So there's all different kinds of concepts about when we say God.
I was only questioning you about those religious traditions which recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Mm-hmm. Why are they different?
Oh. Why are there so many different... there are four major sampradayas.
Oh, okay.
Even within those four sampradayas there are all kinds of branches and so on.
Yeah.
And on some fundamental level, there must be disagreements as regarding doctrine.
There's even disagreement
within
one sampradaya. Well, with sure.
I mean, debates going on.
Yeah.
And for me, it's always interesting to see how a religious tradition both encourages people to question and think through problems and come to an understanding, but at the same time, there has to be some unity, or else the tradition ceases to be.
Yeah, well, sometimes we call it unity and diversity, which is something that Prabhupada advocated. Even Krishna sometimes, there was a debate with Bhima, wanted Aswatthama killed, and Arjuna wanted him spared. Now this is, something right in the Bhagavatam where there were two different, and Krishna sided at first with Bhima and then he finally sided with Arjuna. So he was even dissuaded from his original conviction that Aswatthama, for slaughtering children while they were sleeping, should be killed. So it's a common and healthy thing that there should be questioning and even debate to some extent about different issues. Because the goal, in the case that you're mentioning, is to obtain love of God. Now, how does one go about loving someone? Well, we're all different. We all have personalities. So no two individuals are going to have the exact same approach. But the goal, when we were talking about the goal, is to attain love of God. And since God, by definition, is the Father of all living entities, He's able to accommodate all different forms of worship, all different forms of love. So people come through different philosophies to love God. Some say that God is alone. Some say that God is, we can love God in His form alone. And other sampradayas only want to worship Krishna with Radharani and the gopis. But they're all ways, bona fide, genuine ways of worshiping the Supreme Lord. And some only want to worship Ram, for example. And Lord Chaitanya tested one of his followers who only wanted to worship Ram, and to the point where he said he was willing to give up his life if he couldn't worship his Ram deity. And Lord Chaitanya said, "Oh, I'm only testing you. See, you know, now you've passed the test." So if our conviction is genuine about loving God, and we follow a Vaishnava or bona fide tradition, then it may not be the same as the person sitting next to me or, you know, some other sampradaya. But it's different just because, you know, there's different ways to live. There's different seasons, and the sky is blue and the sun is yellow, and we may never be able to say why the sun is yellow or satisfactorily why the sky is blue or why there's four different seasons in the year. But they're there, and we enjoy them. So in one sense, we can say it's Krishna's way of giving us an opportunity to experience the variety, which Prabhupada once said is the mother of enjoyment. It makes life worth living. It makes the world happen and be pleasant. You know, you wouldn't want to just eat rice every day. You want something, you know, some different tastes in there. So for Krishna, He wants to taste different mellows of rasa. So that's one of the answers why there's so many differences. And it's also just the way that God has created the world. He's created a world with millions of different varieties. And varieties do give us a chance to experience more pleasure. So those are some of the reasons why there are different ways. And everybody is different. So one person might be might get the greatest happiness from dressing a deity. Another person might get that person's greatest happiness by singing for the deity. Another person might be for doing some cooking or some external service, or, making garlands. Yeah, so many thousands and millions of things you can do, and they're all a way of expressing love. Yeah.
I would just ask a question for the for people in the view. What is this, like, chanting? The people are chanting Hare Krishna mantra.
What does it mean? The words.
Yeah,
Krishna is a name for God. It refers to the all-attractive being. Krishna, it actually means all-attractive in Sanskrit, or the one who attracts everything. Rama is a name for the Lord who is... Of course, there are many, many meanings. I'm just giving you one principle, main meaning of the words. Rama means, as another name for Krishna, direct address to Krishna, which means the one who is giving all pleasure and all strength, but mostly it means pleasure. And Hare is an address to the energy, the internal energy, the personal energy. And sometimes this means Radharani. We see Radharani to Krishna's left there on the right. So it's a prayer to the internal energy of Krishna, to the energy of Krishna, sometimes known as Mother Hara or Radharani. So when the three words are put together in the mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, they form what we call the Maha Mantra. Mantra means a repetition of words, or mantra means, man means mind. Mantra means that which delivers the mind. And Maha means great, so it means the great chanting for deliverance. And when these three words are put together, they constitute a kind of appeal, as it were, a plea to the Lord to engage us in serving the all-pleasing, the all-attractive one, and to be engaged in the service of His energy. Like sometimes a child would cry out to a parent. It's from the soul, it's a call. called to, for Krishna to come nearer, or for me to be transported to Krishna. And because it's very deeply implanted within the soul, even those who have no experience of it feel a sense of peace and joy, even from the very beginning. Sometimes devotees would chant in among the Eskimos, or among tribes in the Amazon or on the Nile, who never ever heard, and they were what we would call primitive people. And I've been also into some remote places and gone into even some prisons and been around some pretty unhappy looking types in the prisons. And you would experience something very wonderful to see that just after a very short time of hearing and chanting the mantra, these people would begin to show great signs of great happiness and peacefulness and wanting to, you know, continue doing it. So these are some of the effects of mantra chanting. And those of us who have practiced it, we found that it doesn't get stale like so many songs that we might think of and we might like, but this is something that has a different flavor to it. It tends to grow.
If you're sitting and chanting for like an hour, what is your mind supposed to be doing while your voice is?
The more it can concentrate on the sound, the better. The more focused it can be on the sound, the healthier it is for the mind, right? I mean, ultimately, one should enter into meditation on the activities of Krishna. Krishna has 8 different activities that he does during the day, and then 3-hour segments. But that's a very advanced stage of realization, which comes after many years of chanting and hearing with great attention and devotion and care. But that's what the mind is meant to do. It's meant to just be focused on that sound vibration. Yeah.
Well, what about on an actual representation of Krishna?
Yeah, that's also, it helps. It helps the mind focus because the mind is flickering and flitting around to so many different things. So if one chants in this kind of an atmosphere, for example, then the ability for the mind to concentrate on the sound is many, many times greater than it would be somewhere else.
Ever practice like visualization, just sort of visualization?
Oh yeah, it's also very good because one, there is such a thing as a form that exists within the mind, just like there's a form in a picture, form in a jewel, a form in a deity, a form in sand, form in wood. So the mind is actually a form that one can concentrate on. So it's a kind of mental discipline to fix the mind. Yeah. Yeah, we can sing that. Like we do in the temple. Let me see if we can play it on the harmonium. Really, is that? Okay. We can sing that in there. There's an evening raga. We could sing that in.
Da da da. A rug? Is it Bhairavi? I don't know. I don't know. You know what it is. I think it's Bhairavi. Yeah.
Actually,
Bhairav.
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 Is it Bhairav?